Yes. Ah, wonderful, wonderful ones. So, beloved ones, so tomorrow we're going to be celebrating the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I like to say sometimes his full name to give him his full due, right? The full respect, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And I was thinking that his message and his life's work couldn't be more poignant than at this time in our history. Don't you think? Just perfect. I've not yet had the opportunity to see the film Selma, but this is the 50th year since that historic march from Selma to Montgomery. And Dr. King and many, many others, they were marching for that New Age vision we sang about, right? They were marching for that. They were marching for freedom. They were marching for civil rights. They were marching for voter rights, for equality, and for economic upliftment for all people, and justice for all. And sadly, some 50 years later, we are still hoping and marching for those very same things. And even more has been added to the vision and to the dream. Even more. For a while there, I was a little nervous, and I thought that this generation, this next generation that was coming up, was a lost generation. Because I hadn't seen any indication that they were even aware of some of the things and the trials and the tribulations that took place before their being here. That they weren't aware of the groundwork that was laid for them so that they could enjoy the freedoms that they have. And so I was feeling a little discouraged because I'm not sure whether it was being passed on. And then out of nowhere, young people decided to stand up, wake up, and carry the banner forward. And I feel that's good. Give them some props, yes. They are willing to carry the banner, you know, to take on. All of a sudden, they've awakened and they can see the need for harmony and peace and justice and rightness and righteousness for all living beings. That every soul, every being has purpose and meaning, and it matters. And all the young folks are getting out there from all stratospheres. And I'm thinking, wow, this is really good. I don't have necessarily the time nor the energy to march anymore, but they're marching. They're moving forward. They're challenging the status quo. And they're doing the work. And I'm so grateful and I'm so thankful. Because it tells me that the dream will not be deferred any longer. You know, Dr. King opened his famous speech with these words. He said, "I have a dream." But that's the name of his title. He said this. He said, "I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Now, of course, those last few sentences are the opening words from the Declaration of Independence. And I want us to listen to that. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." That means that it should be apparent to everybody, right? These truths to be self-evident, that all men, or I would say all all people, all persons are created equal. And then it says that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those were some powerful words, some powerful truths that were written by our forefathers years ago. And I always say, be careful what truth you speak, because you may just have to live it out. Right? You may have to live it out. But as I was reading these words, this is the American dream, as Dr. King said. This is the creed that we have formed a nation under. And yet, for the life of me, I cannot understand how people, some people, cannot understand that when any of these unalienable rights that are endowed and given by the Creator, whenever they are abused or denied in any way to a human being, that there's going to be some trouble. Right? How could you not understand that? That somehow the desire for these things, it says these things, among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How can you not understand that these very qualities of being are etched into the human soul? Right? That somehow they are the fabric of one's being. For every soul desires life. The soul will seek life no matter what. Every soul wants to live a good life, to have the basic needs for life met, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically. Every soul seeks life. Every soul, because we are endowed with it, it is imprinted on our being, it is a part of our DNA. Every soul wants liberty, to feel a sense of freedom. And every soul wants to pursue happiness, which means to unfold those things that bring satisfaction and fulfillment to the soul. These things belong not just to a few, but they belong to everyone that has breath. And so how we do not understand that, I'm not sure where that comes from. How we could look at another soul and say, you don't desire what I desire. You don't have a right to have what I desire and want to have. I'm still not getting what is it in the human spirit that causes us to not see that. So for me, the greatest tragedy in the human spirit is not to see this, not to know this, and not to pursue this for every living being, not to support and to promote this for every soul on this planet. That is the greatest tragedy. When I was working on my talk last night, this is what came to me. I said, I too have a dream. That, well, I'm going to read it because this is my dream. This is what Spirit gave me from my heart. I too have a dream that one day every soul will awaken to their true identity and expression as a spiritual being. That every heart would open to its highest capacity for love and understanding. That every eye would only see the connection and the oneness of all life. And that every mind would elevate to the consciousness of the divine, bringing forth wisdom and spiritual revelation or a revealing of the spirit. I have a dream that heaven becomes a living reality and a manifested experience for all upon the earth. I have a dream that there will be no more dreams deferred. Now, that for me is a dream and a vision worth holding. For me. Because as I have said on many occasions, friends, that this is the only way that we are going to be able to evolve along the continuum of life. If we cannot see and hold a higher vision for ourselves as people and as a species on this planet, we will all plummet to the depths of a low vibration and manifestation. In other words, hell on earth. Now, so I know some of you may be thinking, well, we are already there because things are looking pretty bleak. But I say not so. We are simply in the midst of throwing off the old. You know, sometimes old things, things that need to go, don't go away quietly. Some things that need to die off don't die quietly. I remember my gardener telling me that one year I had a beautiful, my azaleas were just blooming. And I said, oh, they're lovely. He said, yes, but we're going to cut them down. I said, well, he said, because they're dying. And I said, how are they dying? They're beautiful. He said, sometimes when a plant is on its next cycle of is dying out, it will give forth the best blooms and the prettiest blooms. It's like it uses all of its energy to try to live, but it's actually dying. So what we see is all this energy and all this ruckus. It's just simply the old dying off and a giving birth to a new life, a new way of being. And if you know anything, that giving birth is not always easy, and it is not always done without some pain, right? And some tribulations. That what we are in the midst of experiencing is a birthing of a new order of being, a new world order. What we are seeing is the dying vestiges of humanity's depravity. That's what we are seeing. Because we as a people and a species on this planet have lost our way a bit and fallen asleep. And through this unconsciousness that we are in the midst of, we believe ourselves to be disconnected from the source and from our own beings and from each other. But I tell you this, that if it is true that every soul is endowed by the Creator with these innate qualities of being, these innate dreams, right, these innate desires, then that means that every person, every soul, every ship will right itself eventually. Every soul will awaken and find out that it is home, that is our course. And while we are struggling to have that manifest, it will manifest. We are in the midst of awakening and birthing and manifesting a new way of being, a new species even on this planet, light beings, spiritual beings. And our task is to see a greater vision for what we all may be. Because there is power in our ability to envision with our imagination out of the realm of the infinite possibilities. I want to say that again. I want us to get that there's power in our ability to envision with our imaginations, to envision out of the realm of infinite possibilities. For what we can see, we can achieve. What we can imagine can become a reality. There's a story in the Bible that I think points this out. And you may be familiar with it. It's the story of Abram. And he's not yet Abraham. He hadn't had his conversion, his awakening yet. So before that, he's Abram and his nephew Lot. And this is found in Genesis chapter 12 and 13. It's a little long, so sit back, because sometimes I just want to read the scripture. And we need to hear it. So this is called, I'm reading starting chapter 12 and 13. The Lord said to Abram, leave your native country your relatives and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram departed as the Lord had instructed, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. He took his wife Sarai, and she had not yet become Sarah because she hadn't had her awakening. But he took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all his wealth, his livestock, and all the people he had taken into his household at Haran, and he headed for the land of Canaan. When they arrived in Canaan, Abram traveled through the land as far as Shechem. There he set up camp beside the oak of Moreh. At that time, the area was inhabited by Canaanites. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, I will give you this land. I will give this land to your descendants. And Abram built an altar there and dedicated it to the Lord who had appeared to him. After that, Abram traveled south and set up camp in the hill country with Bethel to the west and Ai to the east. There he built another altar and dedicated it to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord. Then Abram continued traveling south by stages to the Negev. At that time, there was a severe famine in the land of Canaan, forcing Abram to go down to Egypt, where he lived as a foreigner. As he was approaching the border of Egypt, Abram said to his wife Sarai, look, you are a very beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Let's kill him, then we can have her. So please tell them you are my sister. Then they will spare my life and treat me well because of their interest in you. And sure enough, when Abram arrived in Egypt, everyone noticed Sarai's beauty. When the palace officials saw her, they sang her praises to Pharaoh, their king, and Sarai was taken into his palace. Then Pharaoh gave Abram many gifts because of her: sheep, goats, cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, and camels. You notice the servants are included in with all the livestock. But the Lord sent terrible plagues upon Pharaoh and his household because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh summoned Abram and accused him sharply. What have you done to me? He demanded. Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister and allow me to take her as my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and get out of here. Pharaoh ordered some of his men to escort them, and he sent Abram out of the country along with his wife and all his possessions. So Abram left Egypt and traveled north into the Negev, along with his wife and Lot and all they had owned. Abram was very rich in livestock, silver, and gold. From the Negev, they continued traveling by stages toward Bethel, and they pitched their tents before Bethel and Ai, and they had where they had camped before. This was the same place where Abram had built an altar, and he had worshipped the Lord again, and there he worshipped the Lord again. Lot, who was traveling with Abram, had also become very wealthy with flocks of sheep and goats and herds of cattle and many tents. But the land could not support both Abram and Lot with all their flocks and herds living so close together. So disputes broke out between the herdsmen of Abram and Lot. And at that time, Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land. Finally, Abram said to Lot, let's not allow this conflict to come between us or our herdsmen. After all, we are close relatives. The whole countryside is open to you. Take your choice of any section of the land you want, and we will separate. If you want the land to the left, then I'll take the land on the right. If you prefer the land on the right, then I'll go to the left. Lot took a long look at the fertile plains of Jordan Valley in the direction of Zoar, because the whole area was well watered everywhere. And the garden of the Lord, like the garden of the Lord, or the beautiful land of Egypt. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot chose for himself the whole Jordan Valley to the east of them. He went there with his flocks and servants and parted company with his uncle Abram. So Abram settled in the land of Canaan, and Lot moved his tents to a place near Sodom and had settled among the cities of the plain. But the people of this area were extremely wicked and constantly sinned against the Lord. After Lot had gone, the Lord said to Abram, "Look as far as you can see in every direction, north and south, east and west. I'm giving all this land as far as you can see to you and your descendants as a permanent possession. And I will give you so many descendants like the dust of the earth, they cannot be counted. Go and walk through the land in every direction, for I am giving it to you." Now, this is it was a long reading, but it was a purpose for it, because the very first few chapters of chapter 12 and the very last chapters of chapter 13 in that reading, the beginning of it and the end of it, contain a very powerful message about creating a new vision and living in the realm of possibilities. Now, in chapter 12, it begins by God telling Abram to leave everything that he knew. That's how it starts up. He calls him and he says, "Abraham, you need to leave this country, to leave this country, to leave your relatives, to leave your family. And I want you to set out for a new land that I will show you." Right? And God tells Abram that he would bless him, and that he would make him famous, and that he would make him a great nation. So what that says is to me is that sometimes, in order to possess a new vision, in order to possess new land, we have to be willing to give up the old. You've got to be willing to give up the familiar. You've got to leave everything, your family, friends, because this is metaphorical, right? But what it says is we're leaving the familiar behind in order that we may possess the new. Those things, leave them behind, that cause you to feel stuck, or that cause you to be in a rut, or to cause you to have a repeated pattern in your living, doing the same old, same old. How many of you are doing the same old, same old? Okay, you know, you didn't raise your hand, but I know you're doing the same old, same old. That's right. See, they got to tell the truth. And sometimes to get out of that rut, to get out of this repeated pattern of just living, getting up, going to work, but doing that, you've got to do something different. So if we're going to have a new vision, that means that we've got to envision something new. And so whether we are envisioning a new world order for the world, or whether we're just trying to create a new vision for ourselves, new goals, new dreams, or whatever, we have to be willing to leave the old, or some aspects of the old way behind. See, we try to hold on to everything and reach for the new, but try to drag all this with us. It's not possible. You've got to be willing to get up. What do you value? I'm in the process of thinking about buying a new home, because it's time for me to have my mother come and to stay with me. And so we're having a conversation. I dropped her off back at New York home, and we started looking. I said, "I want you to go through some of the things that are really valuable to you, the things that you want, you know, and then we're going to discard all the rest." And so we looked at some of them. She said, "Well, I need that." And I'm like, that's a piece of junk. And I said, "Look, I'm going to have to get rid of some stuff too. Because we can't take two households and put them into one. We both going to have to get rid of something so we can make this work. Now we have to decide what we think is valuable. Now, what I think is valuable to her may not be what she thinks. So I have to be patient and let her decide what she thinks is valuable. But I'm trying to imprint everything can come. And I'm trying to say to myself, okay, what in this house do you need to release in order to possess the new land, right? That new vision. So this is it. Because when we can start the process of leaving behind that which no longer serves its purpose for us, then we become ready for the last few verses in chapter 13. Then we're ready for those verses that says, when God says to Abram, look as far as you can see in every direction, north and south, east and west. I'm giving all this land as far as you can see to you and your descendants as a permanent possession. Go and walk through the land in every direction, for I am giving it to you. Wow. What my colleague Sheila McKechnie said about this scripture, she says, well, what that says to me is that all I can see, I can have. All I can see, all that I can see, I can have. Do you believe that? Yes. Oh, so tell me somebody, all that you can see, you can have. All that you can see, you can have. Now, see, the trick is, how are you seeing? Right? Because we could be seeing limitation. If you see limitation, guess what? You get to have limitation. If you see the limitless, you can have that limitless. Because whatever can be envisioned by us can be achieved by us if we can see beyond the realm of appearances, beyond the finite manifested realm, beyond doubt, beyond fears. You know, she's got to step out of her fear of leaving her home for 40 years. I got to step out of mine of moving in. I've been independent for 40 years. So, you know, we got to see a new thing. But what it is we, as long as we can move beyond the realm of fear and doubt or the realm of appearances, and we can lay hold and envision the realm of possibilities, that invisible realm of possibilities. And if we can begin to see in that invisible realm, to see what's there in the invisible, then we can manifest it. Now, this is a spiritual feat. This is what being a metaphysician is all about. Can you see that which is unseen? And you got to have some what to do that? You got to have some faith. What is the faith? Faith is the ability to do what? See that which is unseen. If you can see what is unseen and you can dwell there, then you can have it. So what are you seeing for yourself? What are you seeing for this brand new year? What are you seeing for this world? Don't be afraid to allow your vision to be big. Sometimes we say, oh, it's too big. See big. It took us to see big to get here. You got to see big. Don't be afraid, because the bigger the better. What that means is that God is able to perform. What did you just say? That God is so high, so wide, so everywhere present. So we're not fearful of seeing that big picture or too big. See it all, feel it all, because the scripture says, write the vision and make it plain, which means to see it. Write it and so you can see it, to see it all, to see it in all the detail. Give it some color. See, give it some, to bring it to life, you've got to be able to see it. And you bring your dream or you bring that vision to life by the amount of detail you can see within your vision. Break it down. Make it plain. Name it all. See it all. See it and feel it. Because as a reality, then it begins to take and lay whole shape in your imagination, in your heart, and in your being. So don't be afraid to see it. Write, it says, write it all, write it down, and make it plain. Now, after you do that, and you begin to see it, and you begin to feel it, and you give it color, you give it energy, you give it life, you describe it, then it says you've got to move on it. There's an action step that has to happen, because God told Abram, he said, go and walk through the land Walk through that vision. Walk through the land in every direction because I'm giving it to you. Walk in that land. So are you walking through your land? Are you walking through your vision? To me, that means trying it on. You know, seeing, ooh, this is what it feels like in the east. Ooh, this is what it looks like in the west. Oh, this is what it looks like in the south. Try it on. Walk through the breadth. The other version says the breadth of it and the length of it. Walk through it and see it. Are you seeing all the possibilities for your blessings, for the good that God has for you? Sometimes we don't have it because we can't see it. He said, I'm giving it to you. It's already there. So once you start walking through your vision, you'll begin to see things that you have never seen before in the vision. Once you start walking with your vision, once you start walking with your desires, all of a sudden things will begin to open up. Ideas will begin to come to you that you hadn't thought of before. Connections and people will begin to add to your dreams and your visions in wondrous ways. Whispering, oh, see this, do this. All of a sudden it comes to life and your dreams will no longer be deferred when you can walk through them, around in them. They're no longer deferred. And when you can walk through your dream and then accept the good that God has given you, that's when you have power. Now, usually, on Martin Luther King's holiday, the call is for us to do some kind of service, right? Not just to sit home and have a barbecue, but to do some kind of service. And I'm saying I want to add a little spiritual component to this, even though service is a spiritual component. But I want us to, and to do whatever we're going to do in service to others. But I'm adding also that we commit to doing some type of inner spiritual work as light bearers. I tell you every Sunday, we're not here for ourselves. We're here to shine that light. We're here to be, you know, a walking, living manifestation of the truth, an expression of the truth, not just for ourselves, but for others. So I'm saying, all right, so tomorrow, commit some time to, one, seeing the world as it can be. Now, I've given you, a while back, we have the invocation that I've asked you to affirm for 40 days. Everybody still have that? Okay. I should say everybody's still affirming it, but that's okay. And so that invocation, what I'm asking you to do is to add a little extra energy to it. Instead of just affirming it, I want you to actually visualize the words that it's pointing to. That's what I do in the morning. So when it says, from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend upon the earth. And what I do is I visualize the earth and people all around it being filled with light. That light is coming into their entire being. That's what I hold, the visual. Let light descend upon every being. And then it says, from the point of love within the heart of God, let love, right? Touch every heart. So I see love. I see light, and then I see love. I see the world and people in it being filled, their hearts opening and being filled with love. And I go through that process. So I'm adding a little bit more color. I'm adding a little bit more vibration and energy to make it real. Not just some words that I'm spewing, but this is a vision that I'm holding, that I'm feeding with my energy, with my ability to see it, with my imagination, with my words to speak it into being. So do that a little bit if you can. And then as I was writing the words and reading the words from the Declaration of Independence, I said, those are some powerful words. We hold these truths to be self-evident. That all people are created equal. So, and that they are endowed by their creator. So affirm this at some point. Because what I was feeling is that somehow we need to get these words back into the consciousness, back into the hearts of the people in this country. Can you imagine if this was an active part of everyone's consciousness? If these words, if everybody really got up and affirmed, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal and that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What if everybody, from the person who lives in the Appalachian Hills to the person who lives in the White House, from the person who lives in the Bronx, wherever, that everybody holds that consciousness. This country would be transformed. And so we need to get this back into the consciousness of people. Because if we do that, there would be no more dreams deferred. So ask yourself. Finally, you're going to pray for yourself. We did country and we did our world. You're going to pray for yourself. I want you to spend some time seeing the vision that you are holding for yourselves. And not, I'm not talking about writing down some goals and listing goals. I'm talking about creating a vision for your life. Write the vision and make it plain, right? With clarity and detail. See yourself being, doing, having, experiencing, living your vision. Not listing your vision, but living it, loving it. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Ask yourself, is everything that I do moving me and or others towards life? If it's not, you're doing the wrong thing. Ask yourself, does my soul feel freedom? Do I have the liberty to be myself? And am I allowing others to be themselves? Providing that no one is causing harm to another living soul. And ask yourself, if I am pursuing happiness, which means am I in alignment with all of those things that makes for happiness, the things of spirit, the things of God? And if you can answer yes to those questions, all of their questions, then there will no longer be a dream for you, but a living reality. It will be a living reality. So go on, and I want you to walk around in your vision. Walk around the length and the breadth of it, for God has already given it to you. Travel well. Blessings. Namaste. Namaste.